All right, good to see everybody this evening. We're so glad to have all of you here. I want to be an encouragement to you tonight. Sorry I'm late. We had a number of things to take care of right at the last minute. It never fails. Marco was invited to go over to Choice Hills Baptist Church tonight. They support our school, and they wanted to have Marco over. And Brother Stan Craig had preached in chapel earlier this week for us. He heard that it was Marco's birthday, and since they support the school, they wanted to have him over to do something nice for him for his birthday. So we had to work all that out at the last minute. Their service doesn't start till 7:30, so it was a little hectic trying to get all the last-minute details taken care of, getting him over there with some transportation and chaperoning and that sort of thing. And then he couldn't find his arm and a few other little things. I hope he found it. I don't know. We don't know where it was. And then there were battery problems and all the rest of it. But anyway, you know how it is. Okay. He loses his head if it wasn't fastened on, I guess. That cliche has a whole new meaning for him. But Joel Carver, come up here. I got something for you. Last week, Brother Joel asked prayer for a fella and a Jewish man that he's working for. And later in that same week, I had occasion to meet with a lady that makes Jewish or Hebrew New Testaments available. There's one for you to use when you get an opportunity with this gentleman that you're working with, okay? And I have some more of these back here. If you meet Jewish people, Hebrew and English New Testaments. They have the English on the left side, Hebrew on the right side. And that is a tremendous witnessing tool to work with Jewish people. You understand that why that's so, don't you? The Jewish people, they don't have the New Testament. You know about that? Okay. But if you can get them a Jewish or a Hebrew New Testament, they really appreciate that. The fact that you've shown some interest. Now, they won't really jump right into an interest in the New Testament at first, but it's a good way of witnessing to them. I want you to turn to Hebrews 13, and I want to read a couple of verses to you tonight. I'm going to make some comments on these, thank you, on these verses, and then we'll have our prayer time together. Monday and Tuesday, I was in Chicago for the American Association of Christian Schools State Directors meeting. Reese Yandel, who's our executive director, and I went up to the meeting, and we had a good time. I'm really encouraged at what's happening with the American Association. Some of you may not even be aware that our state association is a part of that, and it's had a lot of needs for a lot of years. Christian education has kind of lost its way, in my opinion, in the last few years, and a lot of people have forgotten why we're doing what we're doing. We're studying how to do it better, and we spend an awful lot of time on the what of what we're doing, but you don't hear a whole lot of preachers talking too much anymore about why we're doing what we're doing. I believe in Christian education. I think it's right. I don't think that that people who either cannot, absolutely cannot afford it, or are capable of having homeschooling, and the Lord has led them in that direction, I don't think that they should be badgered from the pulpit for not having their kids in a Christian school. But on the other hand, we're not hearing enough today about the importance of Christian education. 20 years ago, we started our Christian schools. I'm giving you my opinions on this tonight, okay? We started our Christian schools because preachers were going up and down across this land saying the devil's going to get our kids if we don't start Christian schools. And we wanted to raise up a great army of people to go out and be soldiers for Christ. And instead of taking all these spiritual weapons and racing to the front of the battle, they're all racing for the rear in their BMWs. And it has not turned out the way we thought it was going to work. And part of the reason for that is because of the abdication of responsibility on the part of parents. Parents felt like, well, we got them in a Christian school. They're covered. Let's go make money. And that's been part of the problem. Another part of the problem is that the church has the facilities. Everything will work out. And our competition today is not really the public schools. Last several years, folks have been saying that, well, test scores are coming up. Ours would, too, if we gave them the test. I mean, that's been pretty much revealed in the last several months that public school teachers are compelled to, and I'm not indicting all of them, please don't misunderstand me, but they've been compelled to help the kids increase their test scores because of budget considerations, and so many of them have been either teaching the test or outright giving them tests to study in preparation. So there's been a lot of problems there. But our competition in the Christian school movement today is not the public school. It's a pickup truck. And, third VCR. and that sort of thing. That's where the competition is today. And Christian school parents of kids that should be in Christian school are just under a lot of pressure because they want the things that they could buy with that money that the tuition takes. I think that's part of it. But at any rate, we need to get back to the why part of it. And I want you to pray for me as I continue to work with this. I don't claim to be an expert in this thing. Several fellows rose to the occasion yesterday and wanted to make comments and said, well, I don't want to preach, but I'd like to. And so I just finally, I've been going to these meetings for a couple of years now and sitting there sort of paying my dues and listening. And I rose and said, I do want to preach. And so I made a few comments and said, I think we need to remember why we're doing what we're doing. And I'm thankful that we're spending all this time learning how and talking about the what, but I think we better remember the why. And some of the preachers better get a hold of why, too. A lot of Christian schools today, in existence today, were started by men who, in my opinion, now, don't misunderstand me, and I'm not trying to be unkind, a lot of fellows started Christian schools, and it made them successful, got them attention. And a lot of other guys said, well, if I want to be successful like him, I have to have a school, too. And now other pastors are there, and they're having to pay the bills and keep all that thing together, and they're tired of it. They'd rather do something else to be successful. We see that exact same thing in special education. A lot of people come and, oh, I'd love to help you with these kids. I'd love to be committed, and I'd love to just get involved and bless their little hearts and this kind of thing. That'll keep you going for about a month in special education. I want to tell you something. One of the things that we've learned in special education is that the Tiny Tim syndrome is a myth. This concept of the virtuous orphan, just because some little kid is poor and needy does not mean that his attitude is going to be, God bless us everyone. Sometimes these kids mean just the opposite. And they go off to these hospitals and other systems, and they have learned from our communities that because you're handicapped, you get a free ride. And so not only are they handicapped physically, but now they're handicapped emotionally and spiritually too, because they've been learning this hellish philosophy that they can get what they want without having to pay the price for it. We've got a work cut out for us, folks. Christian education is right. It's the thing we need to do. I mean, you have kids going to public schools today riding the bus for an hour with the bus driver playing rock music all the way there. Hall monitors playing rock music in the hallways, and then all the way home for an hour on the bus. And being laughed at because they try to take a Christian stand, and crack and cocaine, things like this in our Christian schools. I mean, in our public schools today, Christian education is not just a type of education; it is the education of Christians. I think that's where we made one of our biggest mistakes. And I've been saying this at a lot of different places, and I don't know if I've ever said that to you, but I want you to know I have some strong convictions on that matter. And I think some of us, the second generation in Christian education, had better get a hold of the why that we're doing this. Otherwise, the few Christian schools that got their buildings paid for in the late 70s and early 80s are going to survive, and the rest of them are going to fold. We used to brag about how we were starting 4 and 5 Christian schools a day. We're probably closing that many now. And it's serious business. And so I want you to be praying for us in that matter. Well, anyway, I was coming back from Chicago yesterday, and I was supposed to get in last night. And American Airlines had a plane broke a leg out there on the runway, and so they shut us down. We didn't get back to Atlanta. So I got to stay last night in Atlanta. I got that far, but I couldn't get a connection here. And I was all frustrated. I was thinking, oh, man, 12 more hours in Atlanta, and I can't get anything done. And they put us in this the Royal Plaza Hotel. If they'd paint the place and change the carpet, it would have come up to just sleazy. It was pretty bad. And I'm not just rambling tonight. I want to tell you something. The Lord showed me that He had me there for a reason. And I want to tell you what that reason was. I want to share that experience with you. But I want to read these two verses of Scripture as I hope to challenge your hearts tonight about this important principle, not only of relishing in and growing through and participating in fellowship with Christian people, but also remembering that our responsibilities are not just to each other. They're to the world as well, to the lost, to our communities. Hebrews 13:1, let brotherly love continue. Verse 2, be not forgetful to entertain strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares. Let's pray. Father, in the few moments that we have to think about this principle tonight, I pray that You'd help us to realize what our responsibilities, not only to each other, but outside are. Lord, give us a renewed zeal, for the importance of fellowship and the importance of the balancing experience of outreach and soul winning and evangelism and simple compassion for those outside the church. Lord, give us wisdom as we consider this, and help me by your Spirit, I pray, to present these truths in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, let me just tell you the story. We waited around there in Chicago. I don't know about you all, but traveling through Chicago by car or by air is a test of faith for me. It really is. Les Ola says he's been driving through Chicago for 20 years, and all they ever do is rearrange the barrels on the interstate. It's unbelievable. I believe it. I don't think they're actually paving the road. I think they're just rearranging the barrels to keep you thinking that they're doing it. I hate to drive. And Les says if his connections have to go through Chicago, he cancels the meeting. I don't think so, but boy, that's frustrating. Well, then you fly. Well, the last two times I've flown through Chicago, this has happened. I was going up to speak for Wayman Gelder Jr. back in the spring. I got to Chicago. I waited at the gate for 2 hours, had a 2.5 hour layover, and kept wondering when they were going to post the flight. And so finally, I went up and asked the lady. I says, "When are you going to have boarding for this next flight?" She said, "Oh, it's been canceled." I said, "You got to be kidding!" And so I said, "Well, what do I do?" And she said, "Well, you have to go down here and see if I get another flight." I go down to this place and I wait in line for 1 hour. While I'm waiting in line for 1 hour, the next flight to Milwaukee leaves. So I finally get another flight on United. It's going to get me there just in time, if everything works right, just in time for the retreat, which started that night at Camp Joy. So I said, "What about my luggage?" They said, "Well, you ought to go down and get your luggage." So I went down to get my luggage. I waited and waited and waited. I had 15 minutes to get to the plane, and my luggage didn't show. So I said, "Look, send my luggage to Milwaukee. I will go try to catch my plane." I went to the wrong terminal. They got four terminals up there. And so I'm doing my O.J. Simpson thing, you know, through the airport there. I'm about to have a heart attack, you know. I'm worn out. My suit is dripping with perspiration. And I finally get to the plane. They're shutting the door. I get on the thing. And I think, well, praise the Lord. So I get to Milwaukee. And I'm leaving at Camp Joy at 2:30 the next day. At 1 o'clock the next day, my luggage caught up with me. And so I'm just thinking, man, I hate Chicago. I hate Chicago. And you know, I tell you, I sympathize with the people that pastor up there. I really do. And the people that have to live up there. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. So at any rate, I had that experience. And I was thinking, this time, won't it be nice not to have to go through that again? So we got there, and a couple of other fellows, we were rejoicing together and talking about the good time that we'd had at the meeting. And then this plane had this problem. And I understand those things happen. So we couldn't make our connection in Atlanta. So I thought, well, that'll be okay. We'll just stay tonight in Atlanta, and I'll come on in the morning. Had to cancel a couple of appointments. I was supposed to meet with a couple of couples this morning. Wasn't able to do that. Got to Atlanta, and they gave us a little voucher and said, "Go down here and wait for the van, and they'll take you to the hotel. I'll be back here at 8:30 in the morning." Okay, fine. So we get down there and wait for the van. And we wait, and we wait, and we wait. And while I was waiting for about 45 minutes, and the van never did come, we had to pay a guy from another hotel to take us to this thing. And while we were waiting, I was watching to see who else was going to the same place I was. And I noticed a young man there, looked like he was in the Marines. He had a Marine haircut, which means he had no hair. And so basically, he had just a little bit on top. And he had on jeans jacket and buttons all over this thing with little slogans and things. And anybody who's been in the military can always tell a guy who just came out of training. He's not really a GI, but he's not a civilian anymore either. He's sort of in limbo. And he's trying to get this military tough thing going. But at the same time, you know, this guy is so young. He is so young. And I'm just thinking, oh my. So I started to talk to him and I was tired and I thought, no, I'm not going to do that. And I'm not going to get started because, you know, the van's going to come in a few minutes. So we waited and finally we all got on the van. We went to the hotel and we didn't get there until about 11:15. We had arrived in Atlanta at 10. I went up and checked into the room and looked around, and I couldn't believe it. I thought, man, am I glad I'm leaving in the morning. And so there's a restaurant that closed at 11:30. I went downstairs, went out to the restaurant. The only person in the restaurant, they were closing the place up there at 11:30. The only person in the restaurant was this young man. And I thought, okay, Lord, I get the message. And so I'll talk to him. So they had a little buffet there, and they had some nice, good home cooking. So I filled me up a plate. And I said, "Hey, you want some company?" Now, I forgot to tell you this. On the way up the elevator, we'd had to wait, I guess, 10 minutes on the elevator in this place. And the whole hotel was filled with military recruits on their way to boot camp. This is the kind of hotel it was. And they have handmade signs written up, curfew, 11:30, you know, on notebook paper, all over the walls in this place. And all the GIs, the guys going to boot camp, had to be in their room, I guess. So I'm thinking, I can't believe they put us here. So anyway, I went back, and on the way up to the room in the hotel, I was just kind of watching this young man, trying to figure out how old he was. And he made eye contact, and he spoke first. He said, "That's a nice suit." I said, "Thank you." I said, "You in the Marines?" He said, "No, I'm in the Navy. Thinking about going to the Marines, maybe transferring." I said, "Oh, well, Navy's pretty good, you know." And so I just chatted with him for a few minutes, and then I saw him later in the restaurant. So I went and sat down with a young man. His name is Jim Bishop. And I started talking to him. And I said, "Do you mind if I pray?" "Oh, well, no." You know, so I prayed for the food. And he was having a pizza, and so his pizza came. And we sat there and talked. So I started giving him my testimony. Told him about how I was saved when I was in the military. And told him about my military experience and tried to encourage him a little bit. And bless his heart, you know, he had his whole facade going there at first where he was going to be the tough young GI. But after we'd talked for the better part of an hour, he became the teenager that he was, 17 years old. Dropped out of high school, was able to get in the Navy. And he started sharing some things from his heart with me. And so I pressed him on the matter of salvation. And he gave a good testimony. In fact, he said that he had lived in Ypsilanti, Michigan, had gone to Faithway Baptist Church. And I said, "Oh, is that right?" And I said, what kind of church is it?" And he said, "Well," he says, "it's an independent Baptist church." I said, "Well, how about that?" And he said, "Yeah, we had some fellows that would come there from time to time." And the restaurant closed up. I reached in my wallet to get a gospel tract. I had one with me. I had a bunch more in my briefcase. So I had given him that gospel tract and was talking to him about it when I was, you know, pressing him about his salvation. And so I said, "Listen, Jim," I said, "I'd like to leave this tract here. Do you mind if I leave it here and you come with me up the room and I'll get another one for you out of my briefcase?" He said, "Okay." So we went on up the room and I got him a briefcase there. And we talked for another hour. And it's going on 1 o'clock now. And he's just warmed up to me. And we're talking and I'm trying to encourage him. And he said, "Yeah," he said, "a fella came to our church several times." He said, "Maybe you've heard of him." And he said, "He really touched my life. And his name is Lester Roloff." And I said, "Yeah, I know Lester Roloff." And I said, I did, you know, before he went to be with the Lord." And he knew about Brother Roloff's death and how that had touched his heart. And he said, "Yeah," he said, "when I was just a little kid," he said, "Brother Roloff came to our church and I asked him to sign my Bible." He said, "Well, I will, yeah, but you got to memorize Psalm 48. And he said, "I did that. And the next time Brother Roloff came, I quoted that psalm to him. And so we quoted Psalm 48, you know, we did that together. And so we had a good time of fellowship there. But I noticed, here was a young fellow going to the military, and he has been up at Great Lakes getting his training for his job, and he's going to be stationed at Norfolk on a USS King out of there. Well, it just so happens that when we go to this Tri-State Christian School Convention that Pastor Dixon mentioned down here in Jekyll Island, Georgia, the first weekend of October. That Saturday, my wife is going to be doing a ladies' retreat, Friday night and Saturday, at Dr. Bell's church in Virginia Beach. So we were trying to figure out how to work this out, and I had some frequent flyer points, and I thought, well, you know, I've always wanted to see his church and his ministry. So I cashed some of those things in, got me a free ticket, and I was going to tag along, go up there with her. So that Sunday morning, the second Sunday, I guess it will be, in October, that Sunday morning, I'm going to be visiting at Dr. Bell's church, and then we'll be home that afternoon and back in church here that night. So I asked him, I said, "Now, where'd you say you're stationed?" He said, "Well, I'm going to be stationed in Norfolk." And I said, "Well, when are you going to arrive?" He said, "September 27th. And I looked and I said, "Well, you know, Jim," I said, "I'm going to be in Virginia Beach the next week." And I said, "Can I look you up when I get there?" "Well, yeah." And so I said, "Yeah, I'd like to take you to a church up there." And I said, "Would you go to church with me?" He said, "Well, yeah." He said, "I should know my schedule. I should be able to do that by then." I said, "All right, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. Now, when I get there, I'm going to get there on Friday night. And Saturday, my wife's going to be busy. But I'll give you a call, and I'll come find you, and I'll make some arrangements. And I'll take you to church there on Sunday morning, introduce you to those people. Will you go with me? Oh, yeah, I'll do that. And so we talked, and it was just like I was talking to my own son before this whole thing was over. And I thought to myself, now here I was worn out, and I was, all frustrated about this dirty old hotel and all of this. And yet God arranged that meeting. He arranged that meeting. Now, it's one thing to let brotherly love continue, and we ought to do that. We ought to have fellowship with each other. But look at verse 2. Be not forgetful to entertain strangers. I thought about that. I went to bed last night thinking about that verse. And woke up thinking about that verse. Be not forgetful to entertain strangers. Now, as I sat down with that young man last night, I thought, now, he's not making much money. And here he is, away from home. I don't know whether he's ever been away from home or not. And here he is in the same old place I'm in. And doesn't know anybody here. And he was doing all the bit, the smoking. I didn't say anything about his smoking. But he said later, he said, yeah, I got to quit that. I ought to quit that. You pray for me. Just the fact that here was a Christian who was talking to him in the way that he had heard when he was a little fella. And that brought him back on target. And so we got finished, and she brought the ticket. I said, Jim, let me get your pizza here. And now, why did I do that? I wanted that young man to remember that meeting. And I did what I could to make him remember that meeting. And it was kind of funny. After we prayed, and I said, well, Jim, let's have a word of prayer right here. So I put my hand on his shoulder, and I prayed, and I asked God to keep him safe, and I asked God to give him some Christian friends. And I had told him all about Gus and Gary and the guys that you've heard me tell about that were a blessing to me when I was in the military. And I said, Lord, just send some fellows like that on, and let him be a fellow like that. And I told him, I said, Jim, you don't have any idea, but what, because of the witness and the testimony that you can have when you get to your duty station, you might win some fellow to the Lord that'll be in the ministry someday. Why? You yourself might be in the ministry someday. And he kind of grinned at me when I said that. And it was just such an opportunity to encourage this young fellow. Now, I was hoping when I first sat down that I could win him to the Lord. But here he was, saved, and really on the verge of getting away from the Lord. Because, when a fellow gets in the military, I mean, he is exposed to an awful lot of wickedness, and it's just overwhelming to him. And so I was telling him, now look at this, Jim. God's going to be with you. Just like he put us together tonight, he's got somebody up there in Norfolk, some soul-winning older brother who will help you. I said, you get together with them and you get in a church there, wherever you go. And while you're out on the ship, 6 months at a time, you find some other Christians there. And I just kind of preached at him a little bit like that, admonished him some. And he was so thankful and so grateful that I was talking to him like that. And it just blessed my heart so. So finally we prayed, and I said, we better get some rest. And so he went on to his room, and I went ahead and got ready for bed. I heard a knock on the door. And I had given him my card. I said, you put this in your wallet now, and I'm going to be writing to you. So at any rate, I heard a knock on the door, and he said, Pastor Vaughn? Now, I had not told him to call me Pastor Vaughn, but he said that, and it just touched me. I thought, and so I said, yeah, Jim, what is it? And he was standing out there in just his jeans and no shirt, and he says, I was getting a soft drink. He said, lock myself out of my room. He says, you got a shirt I could borrow? Go down and get a key. And so I gave him my pajama top, and I kind of grinned at him again. But it was kind of interesting how just in 2 hours' time, there we made friends. And here I was able to touch that young man's heart. I had no idea when I looked at him. Now, I'll tell you, when I looked at that young fella, and I know, hey, look, I'm a preacher, and I'm supposed to be given hospitality, and I love people, right? But when I looked at this guy, I thought, punk. No, I mean, that was my first thought. Oh, God rebuked me. And here was this precious young Christian man, on the verge of going out to serve the devil and being infatuated with what the devil has to offer. And God says, get over here, you preacher. Get over here and talk to that boy, And I thought to myself, I'm so thankful God put me in. What a reminder that was to me. We have no idea of the divine appointments that we miss. No idea. Folks, it is important for us to have fellowship. I am so concerned that you folks learn to love each other. This book that I've been reading by Richard Baxter, he was a Baptist preacher from England writing in the 1600s. In there he talks about the fact that there must be enough pastors for the people, and that one pastor can only meet the needs of a few, and that he must find within his congregation others who can meet the needs of others. And he's got a whole section on that, kind of like what we're trying to do with our deacon caring ministry. And it was so important as I read that, and I thought, boy, isn't that right? Isn't that true? That we care for each other. And then this other balancing truth as well. We must not be content merely to care for each other or to be cared for by each other, but that there are others out here in society today and in our world. I wonder how many people there are in this city that just need some Christian love, not forgetful to entertain strangers, and we don't contact them because we don't know who they are. We don't know what their needs are, and we're just not concerned about them. We don't want to get involved. We feel like they're going to reject us. We feel like they may not want to hear the message. But it could be that they're just crying out for somebody to show a little interest, for somebody to give us some encouragement. And I'll leave you with this thought. What this young man said to me last night, he said, you know, and I was driving home this point of saying, now look, Jim, God is going before you. I said, God put us together tonight, and God's got somebody at the next place you're going, and got somebody at the place after that. And I said, God's going to lead you all the way, and you'll find also that you are the fella that God has put in a certain place for somebody else too. And when I said that, he said to me what I thought was a real blessing and sort of a compliment as he expressed his appreciation for our time together. He said, you know, I had a couple of teachers. He said, I went to Christian school a couple of years when I was growing up. And he said, I had a couple of teachers when I was in Christian school that really made an impact on my life. And he proceeded to tell me some stories about how he'd had to repeat the fourth grade. And he was real embarrassed. And he was always, you know, feeling like he wasn't measuring up to what the other kids were doing. And this one teacher took an interest in him. And he mentioned this lady's name and about how she was always wanting him to do right and live up to his potential. And she wouldn't let him fail or fall short of his potential. And he said, boy, there were times when she'd just stop and come right back to my seat and just spank me right there. You know. And he said, one time I was acting up in church, and that same teacher came back to where I was sitting with my buddies in church and got me and marched me up there and sat me down beside her. And he said, you know, that really embarrassed me at the time. He said, but boy, he said, you know, she really helped me. And as some of you folks here tonight, some of you, your teachers, your neighbors of somebody, you have no idea of the impact that you could have. I try to make it a habit whenever I can to try to be an encouragement to little kids. And if I meet a little fellow and he looks all sharp and he's got his little suit on or something like that, I'm not trying to put anybody in the ministry, but if I can, just kneel down beside a little fellow, put my arm around him, and, boy, you look like a preacher. Maybe God will make you a preacher someday. Or just some little touch. You have no idea what that will do to a little child. How they'll remember that. And how that will influence their lives. And it could be that you as a Sunday school teacher or an Awana worker, you might be the turning point in some little boy's life or some little girl's life. And sometimes I think, you know, boy, you know, how we get so busy and we're so involved. But if we could just stop and just put that arm around that little one and just love them a little bit. And the same thing true with adults, too. Don't be forgetful to entertain strangers. It says, for thereby some have entertained angels unaware. Now, I know what that means. But I think there's something else there, too. What that means is that, like Abraham and others in the Old Testament, they saw strangers coming, and they greeted them, and they had hospitality, and they opened their homes to them, and they brought them in, and they turned out to be messengers from God. And you know what? This young fellow last night, when I decided I was going to sit down at his table and just talk with him for a few minutes, I thought I was going to be a messenger to him. And in a sense, I was. But in another sense, God used him as a messenger to me to remind me of a very important lesson. Sometimes, you know, you get so busy and you travel through airports, and after a while, people become something to avoid rather than somebody to talk to, you know? The world is filled with people that are hurting and need our help. I remember the story about Sergeant York. Remember that story? Went out and rounded up, was it 93 Germans he took prisoner by himself and brought them all back? And somebody said to him, "Where'd you find all these guys?" He said, "Man, the woods is full of them. Go find some yourself," he said. Now, that's the truth. They're everywhere. They're hurting people everywhere. And I want to just challenge you and admonish you before the Lord to remember that principle. Let's do let brotherly love continue. But let's not be forgetful to entertain strangers. Let's just show some compassion. Keep gospel tracts in your pocket. I carry some in my wallet all the time, because I know I'm going to have my wallet, because it's got my driver's license and my money, if I got any, and all that stuff. And so I know I'll always have gospel tracts if I keep them loaded up in there. Carry a New Testament with you. Be ready to talk to people and get in the habit of just being an encouragement. And if you have an opportunity, go as far as you can with it. If you don't have much time, leave a tract with them and pass it on your way. Don't forget that. I urge you to do it. What a blessing it is. Now I've got a young friend. I've got his address. I'm going to correspond with him. I'm going to look him up when I get up there. I'm going to try to get him in church. And boy, that'll be great. Listen, you get him in Rod Bell's church. I don't know what more you could do for a fella, you know, than to help him like that. He'll learn the Bible and he'll grow and take a stand and might even be a preacher someday. Wouldn't that be something? Hey, wouldn't it be something if someday, 4 or 5 years down the road when he's finished with his Navy training, if a young couple walks down that aisle and they stand here someday and I introduce to you Jim Bishop and his wife coming to Bob Jones to study for the ministry. And I say to those of you who are here tonight, remember the fellow I told you about, the young man that was in the Navy that I met in the hotel in Atlanta? Here he is. You think that's hard to believe? Think that's unusual? No way, friend. That happens all the time. But that kind of fruit doesn't come unless that kind of planting comes. And boy, the Lord taught me that again last night. So praise the Lord for it. I wanted to leave you with those thoughts. Okay?